when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Welcome to The Shit Show.
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. I didn't see you there. That's totally awkward random.
Kia ora, everybody. I am joined for this week's episode of The Shit Show by someone that you already know, you already love. You're going to be seeing a bit more often if this person doesn't get scared away by this week's ep. We've got Slam Dunk. I don't know if we can keep Slam Dunk.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's scaring me off is like my tortured relationship with my sobriquet.
What's a sobriquet?
It's like a nickname. It's a fancy French word for nickname.
And that is also a really good example of how this podcast, when Dunk is on here, is going to go. It's going to be good for both of us because he's going to say things that I don't get, like Squish often does, and then I will be like, and what's that? And then Dunk, with all his years of knowledge,
just weighing me down,
gets to explain it. Dunk, do you want to introduce yourself to the people again?
Kia ora, I'm Duncan Grieve. I am the founder of The Spinoff, yep, which is a kind of current affairs and culture website from New Zealand. I do quite a bit of podcasting, and
he has a really good one called The Fold about the New Zealand media industry. Or like actually tech as well. Media tech, fun stuff.
It's all just draining down the same hole.
Yeah.
You know? until the last drops out, then I'll be here.
And then what's your other podcast?
It's called The Real Pod. It's about reality TV, and we're heading into like the primest season. Love Island started yesterday, Married at First Sight Australia, just iconic show, and one of my co-hosts, Jane Yee, is actually on Celebrity Treasure Island, which is a New Zealand reality show. So, look, it's a busy time.
So that's one thing about Dunk is he loves reality TV.
Loves it.
Loves pop music.
Loves pop music.
Loves pop music, which is great because there's three of us in the room right now, also our producer Samuel, and we all have this like gorgeous Venn diagram of music that we love. So in the middle, there's like Samuel was telling me he's really into Ethel Kane and he loves Carly Rae Jepsen and we're talking about Caroline Polachek, and there's just a great energy in this room right now of people that I know all love similar shit. I don't actually know what I'm wanting you to do with that, but maybe go and listen to some of the artists.
Just appreciate it.
Yeah, just appreciate it.
But it is something that I feel like I didn't know that about you, but I'm just gesticulating at Samuel here, but I could have guessed it. And now that I know it, I just feel even more secure when I'm around you.
And I do have to say a quick anecdote that's not mine. And you don't even know Samuel, but he is a legend. And he just told me the story before we got on mic. He said he had a bone to pick with me because he'd made me this playlist. Because I have a very specific taste of music and it's hard to find new stuff that really scratches the itch. And so Samuel was making me this playlist, and yesterday he got in quite a major car accident and used this playlist to calm him down. The bone he had to pick with me was that I never followed him back on Instagram because he's a really controversial Instagram name that I didn't recognize was him. And anyway, he made me this playlist and he got in a bad car accident and listened to it to calm him down. So there you go. You didn't ask for that, but you got it. Duncan, and now you know one of your workers, unsafe. Unsafe
at any speed, but that's fine.
Unsafe at any speed. Okay, so now you know a little bit about Duncan and a little bit about Sam, a little bit about Samuel. One other thing about Duncan is that he's not that extremely online. So when I'm going to ask him his weirdest thing that he saw on the internet this week,
I panicked.
He panicked a little. Tell us why. Tell us your ethos.
Well, so, I mean, yeah, because I don't know if I'm not I'm not extremely online. Like, I'm constantly connected to the internet. I'm an adult. Like, I know how this stuff works. But about a year ago, in consultation with you and some other people, I made this deliberate move where I stepped away from all social accounts. Mm-hmm. They were just like grinding my gears, and I was seeing a lot of people I knew and loved say things that seemed like bad faith or stupid, and where I knew they were way smarter than I was just like, this is just not good use of my fading CPU capacity. I just need to just be. But I went through all of the sort of intended and unintended consequences of that. I thought I had like a reasonable handle on it. But the thing that I don't get and truly miss is weird. Like,
yeah.
Because I have like the internet habits. It's not even of like a 75-year-old. Like it's almost like it's unshackled from social media.
Yeah.
So I see the most normie stuff. Like I get a trillion Substacks. I go to news apps from famous publications. I read magazines.
Yeah.
You know, I consume professionally made media by.
Oh, you snob.
I know, but I don't mean to. Well, I did in a way, but. Like it is weird. Like you just go, oh, that's the thing that's missing is.
And this isn't to say you're not on the pulse. Like, let's be real. Duncan is incredibly connected. Like, you send me things to read about, to learn about, but I am more connected to the memes and the weird stuff that's going on.
Yeah, I get it. I feel like I get it through you and through people I work with, but also I have three daughters aged 9 to 22 who both send me things and just sort of they've got the
internet they got the vibe
in them in this way where it's just like you can feel it radiating out of their slang. You know, like when you watch Love Island, it's just like, here's a new batch of slang.
Yes.
Specifically British slang that kind of drops each season. It's a similar kind of, you get real-time updates on culture changing through them, but I don't get the primary source now.
Yeah.
I'm kind of second-order consequence.
That's kind of good. That's actually called protecting your peace. You're setting yourself some boundaries and you're just getting the good shit. I have to filter through so much mind-numbing stuff to get to some good things. One of the good things I did find is my weirdest thing of the internet this week.
Tell me.
It's this theory, and you will have seen it because I know you read the newsletter, and everyone listening, you will have seen it too. It's this theory that when you're a kid, like every kid, bar a few, whatever, had like a hyperfixation on something tragic when they were younger, and someone sort of joked that you're either a Titanic girl, a Salem Witch Trials girl, or a Anne Frank girl. I was a Jonestown Massacre girl for absolutely, like, do not know why. I, for some reason, wanted to do all my history projects on it, and it just gripped me in some weird way. It kind of makes sense. Everyone's into, like, culty stuff. Not everyone. A lot of people. But, Duncan, I wanted to know, did you have a weird, tragic thing you were into as a kid?
I did, and I'll explain what it was. But I want to know a bit more about your Jonestown Massacre piece, like where it came from and what. Because that's like a. I almost think that thing should be more famous. Like you should probably unpack what it is.
It's basically the Jonestown Massacre. And I can't even remember that much about it. I think it was the People's Temple. Do you know much about it?
I mean.
I feel like I've blocked a lot of it out, but it's basically this guy was like a cult leader, and everyone that came along to his quote unquote cult drunk some Kool-Aid with poison in it, and they all died in like a collective suicide pact.
Yeah, and drinking the
Kool-Aid
is descended from that. I think it's quite a cool. I think it's a good modern one. I did have two. I think that basically I found the idea of mass vanishings really, like, they just buzzed me out. And the first, I was really into the Marie Celeste. I thought that was just.
Don't know what that is.
So it was a ghost ship that was found adrift, not a trace of the crew on board. Ghost ships in general are.
Okay. Bermuda Triangle actually was huge for me.
Same.
Okay.
Yeah. But the one that the absolute top of the tree was the Roanoke Island colony. Which was basically like early European settlers in the US, way before it was the US. Basically, there was a colony, like hundreds of people left on this island who when you know some people returned to it the following year, it just completely vanished without a trace. And this, the thing that really got me, the hook, was that there was this word carved into, I think it was a tree on the island. Samuel was also up on this, which just said crotone. And I don't know. It just got me. Because it is a tragedy,
it's like
but
a
it's
Q
a
drop.
Mystery too. Yeah, yeah. It's yeah. Very Q drop. except that, you know, you had to disappear 300 people.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of people.
So there's no answer to it.
I think there are theories.
Yeah, naturally.
But it, basically, there was this like toilet book.
Okay.
You know the concept of a toilet
book? No. Like you read it when you're taking a shit.
Yeah, it was basically before there were phones.
Okay,
These things were just stacked in British bathrooms. And it was called, I Can't Believe It's True, I think. And there must have, I've seen this in multiple art
shops.
That
walked so Ripley's Believe It or Not could run.
Pretty much. I mean, they might have been simultaneous. But it was put out by St. Michael's, which I think was the parent company of Marks & Spencer, like iconic UK supermarket department store. I'm going on too long with this. But it was basically just all these kind of two-paragraph-long, buzzy things, like, you know, and that some, most of them were real tawdry and silly, but there were just a few in there where you're like, holy shit, that's real, but that's wild. And they all stand up. Like, they were true.
I'd like a copy of that book.
It's a hell of a book.
Fuck. Okay. What's it called?
I think it's called I can't Believe It's True.
Okay.
But that doesn't sound right. It's in that realm. Okay. I'll find it.
For someone that thought they were going to struggle with bringing a weirdest thing, you have some. That was a pretty weird. They were pretty weird things to be obsessed with.
Yeah, but pre-internet, you know?
Pre-internet. So basically, this podcast is no longer about internet culture. We're going back to just bathroom books, toilet books, whatever you call them. Duncan, I want you to start us off this week with a news story.
Okay.
I just want to preface. Duncan has come into this wanting to have no notes, like just going in off the top of his head, whereas Squish and I always, you know, have our notes there to make sure that we're getting shit right. So don't come for us if he says anything out of pocket. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, look, it's fair. I just really like to podcast in the moment, you know. I like to look my podcast, my collaborators in the eye. I find the screen distracting. So the thing I want to talk about has honestly been my obsession of the summer to the point where I had to go and, you know, we had like a little area of our campground where if you wanted to talk about this, you had to go to this like basically naughty chair.
Was it imposed not by you?
It was imposed by my wife, Nicola.
Nicky,
yeah.
Legend. shut you up.
It was just like, you can't talk about ChatGPT. Because ChatGPT to certain people is really terrifying. Like,
so we're talking about ChatGPT. That's your obsession.
Well, that was my obsession the summer. There is a beat to it, which is that CNET, which is a very well-known kind of technology aggregator type news site, has been using it to produce,
pieces.
Dozens of stories over the past couple of months, which feels like both inevitable but also like a somewhat new thing. I mean, there's been AI stories. Should we talk about – do we need to explain ChatGPT at this point?
Yeah. We have a whole episode about ChatGPT, but just for the people that may not have listened to that, it's – explain what it is real quick.
I mean, it's part of this wave of consumer-facing AI that sort of swept the – internet and buzz people out all through the second half of last year. So you had DALL-E 2, Midjourney, Stable Diffusion, which are all the image generation AIs. And then ChatGPT came out, which was text-based. But I think the thing that kind of made it seem bigger than the others was, you know, A, it could do sort of plausible examples of things that are like journalism. So every journalist immediately shat themselves, which, you know, that's actually just kind of a narrow use case for it because it can also code and do all kinds of other things. You know, it's been generating malware. There's basically, if you can think about it and it existed on the internet prior to September 2021, then there's a decent chance that ChatGPT will either do a very sophisticated or at least a decent facsimile of that thing. You know, this story, which was, I think, broken by a platformer, and it was basically, it just felt like we're walking into a future where there machines are going to generate increasing amounts of the content that we consume online.
and we might not know that they're what are creating these stories. Because I'm guessing that, weirdly, I was more worried at the beginning about DALL-E 2 and being able to put in a prompt and create a piece of artwork than I was about ChatGPT being able to write the newsletter.
Really?
Like that, because, no, and maybe this is a narcissistic thing, because I was like, oh, no AI can connect with my audience the way I can, or crack the jokes that I can. But if it learned from me long enough, if it learned from all my past newsletters, then it maybe could have. So when I read this story, I felt like it was a really dunk story as well, because if you're just doing a basic piece of journalism, like I'm assuming these CNET stories were, what's to say that you actually can't just get, well, they did, get a program like this to write it for them.
Yeah, and it claimed that there were human editors vetting it. We've got no reason to disbelieve that. So maybe it is just speeding up the process. And to be clear, there's been AI news for years. Like, you can basically put in like a baseball scorecard or a basketball box score, and AI can do you a totally serviceable explanation of what happened in the game. Financial News has had it based on kind of market announcement for years. So in that respect, it's not like completely new. I think it's the sort of scale of what you can imagine that feels different now.
Okay, so I think when Dunk comes on this podcast, something that he should watch for us is AI, which is his new obsession. But like AI in news specifically, I think is interesting, because I don't know, news is already fucking boring, if I'm going to be honest, and AI in news to me feels even more boring. So maybe it'll be good for us.
Well, there is a world where it allows people to take some of the more boring bits of making news and frees up more time to make it more interesting.
Yeah,
for example, my fear is that the history of the economics of news, not to get even more boring, is that anything that can be automated away, instead of being used to free up more creative time to make news more interesting, is just actually to kind of
make more reduce
headcount, you know, be able to make news cheaper because of these external forces acting on it, which is all very cheery. But, you know, I think you're right, like, ultimately, that in the sort of short to medium term, the relationship that people have with you, Lucy, and the kind of the style and scope, it's kind of unimaginable in that period of time that it could be replicated. But
all journalism isn't like that personality-driven stuff, eh? So, and it shouldn't be either. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. Maybe I'll be safe and the BBC will all just be AI-generated news.
Yeah. It's one of those things that, like, it's so enormous that it just kind of sits in your mind and you need to see people using it. Right now we're just such babies with this thing. I think it's definitely something to monitor.
And to finish off Dunk's segment, I actually think ChatGPT is dope. Like, I actually am quite excited, only because, I don't know, it feels like a tangible and interesting thing that might be able to take on Google in a weird kind of way.
Yeah.
But that, again, that's something that we'll watch. Something, look, we'll circle back on for you all. Whether it takes over Google, you'll know, even before we talk about it on this silly little podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/spoken today.
Podcast. Okay, I'm going to do my first story.
Tell me.
And I thought of this headline and I wondered why I hadn't written it and why other people hadn't written it. And I'm hoping someone else hasn't, but they definitely will have. Greta gets carried away. So
really good writing.
Yeah. And I was like, damn, I've already talked about this, so I have to do a verbal headline with my good headline. You have all probably heard or seen about this, so it's going to be quick, but Greta Thunberg, who we all know is the climate activist that basically has to take the heat of every climate activist ever, because she's the one that we all know. She was picked up and carried away alongside other activists during protests against the demolition of the coal village of Lusrath. She was released after an identity check, which I imagine was a pretty easy identity check. So, like, just to tell you, the story's not huge. She was taken and then she was released. It was interesting because, obviously, this is not a hot take, but without her getting picked up and taken away, and in the photos she looks so unbothered and, like, they went really viral, whatever. Without those photos, I wouldn't have known shit about the fact that this village is basically going to be cleared out to make way for a mine, to expand a mine, right? That is why people do these extra things that make headlines, so that people like us learn about them via something like Greta Thunberg being taken away. Dunk, it's giving throwing soup on art, right? It's giving doing something cray to incite some sort of reaction or some sort of awareness. But, like, is this the way?
Well, I have complicated feelings about this because I think, like, I think that, for example, Extinction Rebellion has just announced an end to disruptive protest.
Okay.
So
you need to talk about what Extinction Rebellion is.
So Extinction Rebellion is basically a climate action protest group that's, okay, I think it was founded in the UK. There are, you know, it's one of those decentralized organizations. There are branches of it in New Zealand now. They pioneered a lot of the, you know, these kind of very
outrageous.
Basically stuff that is designed to disrupt society. To, you know, the thinking was that if you can just make people aware of what is going on, then they'll change their behaviours, then there'll be policy changes. So they glued themselves to motorways. You know, it's certainly, if it wasn't them, then it's of a piece with what they do. They're throwing soup on masterpieces and so on. But the reason that they have announced an end to it, you know, is basically this idea that it might not actually, you know, be changing sentiment towards climate action. In fact, it might be hardening attitudes towards it.
So is this group being like, we're not going to do shit like this anymore because it doesn't work? It's been, obviously, because climate is still changing, it hasn't really worked. It hasn't really influenced policy in the way that they thought it would. But I didn't know that, like, the people at the forefront of this whole brand of protesting had been like, we're not doing that anymore.
I mean, on some level, it's like, is it dissimilar from, you know, the IRA announcing, you know, which is the Irish Republican Army, that was, you know, ran a campaign of bombings through the 70s and early 80s, you know, announcing a ceasefire. It wasn't that they stopped believing in the cause of Irish republicanism. Yeah. It was that they, on some level, decided that that wasn't the best method of achieving the ends. And I think that people, whether it's by research or deduction, figuring out how to do persuasion rather than by just yelling at people and telling them that they're awful, but sort of having them walk into the light, that's something I think about a lot. And so I think that Extinction Rebellion thing of stepping away, it makes a lot of sense to me, and I'm curious to see where they go next. In terms of protesting a town being turned into a coal mine, though, that seems just like kind of meat and two veg, very normal protest. And I'm sort of like, yeah, you got to keep doing that.
And I did see that they were protesting this one little village being turned into a coal mine, but that was because the German government was either going to turn, like, I think it was five other little villages into coal mines. And then they were like, okay, we won't do that. We'll just do this one. I mean, still turning one village into a coal mine is, like, not good. Just for the record, that's not good. But, yeah, the government had already been like, oh, quid pro quo. Well, anyway, they were going to do five and then they did one.
It's also complicated, right? Like, because part of the reason they're doing that, no doubt, is because they're addicted to Russian gas.
Oh, literally, that was the next point. You took it out of my mouth. That's, yeah, they're having to do it because they relied so much on Russian gas that they don't have now, because I don't know if you guys remember, but war in Ukraine. It's ruining everything.
And they call it the energy weapon, you know, where you just deprive people of access to a thing they need to live to kind of further your geopolitical ends. Then there's this other thing. Did you see that Sweden found this giant deposit of rare earths, which are used in the creation of a lot of the new like batteries and kind of the decarbonizing of transport systems?
Didn't see that.
But it's going to take 15 years to actually start getting them out of the ground because the EU's environmental regulations make it really hard to open a new mine for rare earths, but obviously it's quite easy to open a coal mine.
Mm.
This stuff is all complicated.
It's all very complicated, but I was going to say, we don't shy away from it. Yes, we kind of are because we're moving on from that really complicated point that Duncan just said. Something that was interesting, though, is obviously these activists are protesting this coal mine because they want to move to renewable energy. Now, something that's not renewable energy but maybe sustainable energy, nuclear energy. And I know you've got a story for me on that.
Yeah.
You're gonna have to explain this to me in like a real explain like I'm five way, I think.
Yeah, I'll do my best. I'm not great at it. You are and I'm really not. So maybe poorly cast for this podcast.
What the fuck, Duncan?
So right now, Davos is happening.
What is that?
So the World Economic Forum, which is where a lot of business and political leaders get together, and at Davos in Switzerland, and they just try. They have earnest conversations where they try and address the great kind of challenges of our age and opportunities of our age. It's very much it feels a bit washed now. It's very much a kind of globalization era.
What's the greatest challenge of your age?
I mean, it's like climate change of my age. Oh my God. It's like trying to figure out how to.
I was
going
to say, it's not being able to keep up with
names. Yeah, not being able to keep up with names. There are bigger challenges for the world.
Sorry.
There's basically the idea that. That kind of thing is going out of fashion to begin with, but it's there is still some kind of useful, function to this in the sense that it's just hard to get these people in a room. Yeah. You see that with all of the client, the COP
conferences
and so on as well. So Oliver Stone, who's this amazing film director who's gotten very weird. Let's be clear. Over the last decade,
I've never heard of him.
So he directed Platoon, like a classic 80s Vietnam War movie, and just a whole bunch of really, really exceptional films.
And he's gotten weird.
He's gotten weird. Maybe he always was weird, but he started to really indulge his weirdness. That's always possible. Like he made this series of like long form interviews with Putin, which didn't really challenge Putin's views, and obviously that hasn't aged well.
No.
It wasn't even that long ago. But anyway, he's just and some of this is like, does the fact that he's the messenger make this thing less likely to succeed? But he's made a documentary called Nuclear Now, which is basically a semi-polemic, probably in the style of, Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth or Michael Moore's Bowling for Columbine, kind of that's the form, basically saying if we want to sort out climate change, we've got to use nuclear power.
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting thought.
I think it's interesting. I think the people will find it interesting as well because Squish spoke about the huge breakthrough in nuclear fusion like a few weeks ago. And it was the first time I'd ever heard of it and the first time that I had really sat and been like, okay, well, if things like protesting and creating awareness and all of us like recycling and shit isn't going to work, which like keep doing that, but it's probably not going to work on the scale that we need to reverse what's happening, then we need to be using science and technology and some amazing brains in the world. And then the fact that you could create energy out of, and again, I'm not a scientist, but the fact that you could create extra energy out of like nuclear shit, whatever they were doing, felt like a real huge like step forward. But then there's people that are still so against allowing nuclear energy. So I'm like, I actually don't know where I sit on it. Like it's probably good.
Well, I mean, I if you like a huge amount of the world's energy is generated by nuclear means. France in particular has dozens of plants. The world is also really scarred by its relationship, not just to the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but also Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and Fukushima in terms of those just acutely made us aware of the downsides of these things. But it's always hard with humans, right? Like, you should try and assess these things on a net basis.
Yeah.
And the net of having a huge amount of power with almost no carbon emission when we are sort of just slowly dying from our emissions, it just feels like, you know, because we're talking right now in a country which has complete ban on all forms of nukes.
I was going to say, I can smell the uranium on your breath.
Yeah, sorry.
I don't know if that will land with many people, but definitely anyone that took my Year 11 social studies class, it will. No, but I think, so let me get this clear. Do you think people should watch this documentary?
No, probably not. I don't feel like I can endorse something that's made by Oliver Stone in 2023.
But should people start thinking about nuclear energy?
I basically think that nuclear energy needs to be something that we try and discuss in a rational way.
I was going to say, divorced from all those huge events that have scarred.
Well, they can be part of the conversation. Yeah. They just can't be so overwhelming that we can't have a conversation about it at all.
Mm. Okay, team, well, that's a lot of food. That's a lot of food for thought. The face Duncan's giving me right now is like, I think people are going to love this.
My thought is, the face is, am I doing this right?
You are doing it. You are doing it like completely right.
Take that out, Ruby.
No, Ruby, it's up to you. Ruby always leaves in shit that I ask her to take out, so sorry if that happens.
We had a good one. On the fold with Samuel, I hope you don't mind, didn't take out me like coaching's interview subject in this like quite bossy, like overbearing way. So, you can talk for longer. This isn't a radio interview, bro. Went out with the pod. So that's mainly just crack up. So I hope you understand that,
that is Samuel. Crack up. And you will not be editing this one. No, I'm kidding. Okay, Dunk, my last story for today. Actually, not. My second to last story, because I have a good news story as well. Twitter briefly verified the Taliban, or some members of the Taliban. So this is a super quick story, and I'll give you a really quick refresher that you probably don't need. Twitter started this thing where you can pay for a blue verified tick. It didn't go that well, but people still did it because it's fun, I guess, for some people to have a verified tick. So before you could pay for it, it was just for accounts that were considered active, notable, and authentic for the public interest. But since you could pay for it, anyone, that even people that weren't notable or authentic, could buy a blue tick. And a couple of members of the Taliban briefly had one beside their names, which is just, it's honestly just kind of funny. Like, I don't know, it's obviously, okay, they are, not to be devil's advocate, but these people are they were verified members of the Taliban. So anyway, the head of the Taliban's Department for Access to Information, which is just a bizarre cool fucking department. And the head of the media watchdog at the Afghan Ministry of Information and Culture both got the tick. So I can't tell if, like, this is something that Elon would be into or not. Like, I can't tell. He probably liked it.
Yeah, I feel like there are certain news stories that have to be reported, but the scale of them feels off.
Yeah.
Like, to me, this is an inevitability. As soon as they announce this program, all kinds of weird stuff's going to happen. And if I'm honest, I feel like the reporting on Twitter now is largely a result of Elon Musk kind of having the cult of his personality having moved from dude who makes electric cars and puts rockets in the sky to kind of right-wing or right-wing sympathizing troll, which has made journalism as a – and you know, like a whole kind of – you know, we're interested in him, but I sometimes think that news organizations, we sort of start to be a little bit second order moved by the algorithm. In that this, like, I was listening to Radio New Zealand, you know, our kind of public broadcast this morning, and this was like in the prime time slot, and I'm like,
this story.
And I'm like, this is
a weirdest thing you see on the internet type vibe. Like, this isn't number one. I don't think even I reported about this in the newsletter.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like
this is shit show stuff. It's just lowbrow.
Yeah, well, it's also just, it's just, it's some easy, stories though. Are inevitable.
Yeah.
Like when it's announced, if you just game out, well, what's going to happen here? You know that's going to happen. I guess you report it.
Yeah.
It just doesn't matter that much.
No. This, and thanks a lot for shitting on my news story. No, I'm kidding, because I know when I want to have a quick, easy thing that I don't have to think too hard about because it's like a net click or a net bad or a net good, I'll fucking sometimes write about it. But I did think, like, Twitter briefly verifying the Taliban, I probably didn't even need to go into it. It's all in the headline. Of equal importance, though, my good news story this week. And Duncan, just to preface, I haven't watched it, and you don't need to go on for ages about it if you don't want, but Love Island is back. That is a good news story because it becomes my whole personality, and I haven't watched the first episode yet, but you have.
I have. I watched it last night.
Is it going to be good, or?
I think so. It's this weird thing, and because this is only my second season in.
Oh, yeah, you're new to Love Island.
I am.
Egg.
And so I know, shame. It's just because it seemed like a huge commitment, like 50 hours or whatever, and now I'm like,
I mean, better commitment than work.
Yeah. Well, it's also just, I didn't realize the coziness of it.
Yeah, it's the bomb.
And I can't, this is real terrible, but everyone on it seems like a sort of a store brand version of last season's cast. Is that normal that it feels that way?
And it feels that way until, I don't even, no, actually, it won't even change. It gets really hard to distinguish between seasons because they are all like a slightly more wannabe influencer version of the last season.
So it's just, it's a very archetype driven. It's a cast show even down to the type.
But you still will feel the connections by the end of it that you felt last season. I can't even remember who was on last season's one or who won.
Davide and Nick and So.
Oh, yeah, that was a fucking good season. This one's interesting, though, because not even your families are allowed to control your social media on this one.
That's a big change.
Which I like, because what happened last year and what's been happening for the past few years was families would try and explain the behaviour of, it's not up to them, they'd try and explain the behaviour, like when Jax was treating Paige like shit, and they said, well, look, he's actually got ADHD, and then everyone in the ADHD community was like, you cannot lump us in with Jax's behaviour. So I think it's actually a good move that families don't have control anymore.
Yeah, I think, well, you can feel them start to be aware of, I'm going to make a quick recommendation here. BBC did this podcast called Unreal, which is like a 10-part sort of history of reality TV. It's so good.
Great rec.
And they basically, like, they did, I think, maybe one or two episodes on Love Island and where they really went through all just how messed up it is. But you can feel,
say fucked up if you aren't on here, on this podcast.
You couldn't possibly.
My daughters might listen.
But you can feel the show responding to the criticism in it. Do you remember last season, this is the first time I saw it, where the public paired everyone up and it was just horrific.
Did they do that again this
year? No, they've dropped that.
Okay,
it's gotcha. Like, it's a sort of a Yankee Swap version of that, which maybe that is, that's where you basically, the person who comes in can choose whoever they want, even if they've been coupled up. Is that normal?
That's normal.
Well, that's back. And
it's back to that.
It's real tense, but real fun to watch. And marginally less objectively bad for society than the public pairing people up, according to...
Yeah, according to, like, if they look similar, basically. Yeah. If, like, you know the brother and sister thing where it's like you date someone that looks like your sibling?
Yeah, siblings
basically,
are dating.
Yeah. Anyway, it's back. It's a great news story for us because it means we can not think about Elon Musk or nuclear energy for, like, an hour a night.
Whole hour a night.
Love that for us. And if you love Dunk and you just can't get enough of him, you know that you can find him on The Fold or writing for The Spin-Off and hopefully sometimes writing for Shit You Should Care About in our newsletter or on The Real Pod. He's basically everywhere. So fair enough if you don't want to go in there.
Totally, totally fair.
And if you want to hear more from me, you should go and listen to Culture Vulture. And we are going to be doing a Love Island chat in our Substack chat. So if you're watching along with us, get in there, give me all your hot takes. That's all I want. I want that 1 hour to be extended to 4 hours a day where I don't have to think about work. And you got anything else to say to the people?
No, I'm just really stoked to be here. Thanks for having me on, Lucy.
Ernest.
Yeah.
So earnest. Bye, everyone.
when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.